We are in a journey with Jesus through the Gospel according to Luke. And we're going to look at it today again, where we left off last time, which was where Pilate had tapped out and relinquished to the Jewish leaders to crucify Jesus. It wasn't good enough to punish him. It wasn't good enough to beat him and to scourge him. They said they wanted him crucified. We're going to look at today. We're going to see why they wanted that. I want to just sort of present to you a question to be pondering, if you will. Crucifixion has several dimensions. What do you think of when you think of the crucifixion? Do you think of the Lord's death? Is that what the Bible writers, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, is that what they push? Is that what they want us to see? Is the death? Or is it the agony? Is it the aspects of pain and suffering that he went through? Is that what they push and want us to really capitalize on and see? Or is it the humiliation? What do you think it is that the Bible writers really want us to see because they write so much about it? I want you to just be thinking about that as I work my way towards that. We're going to be looking at the cross today. It's from the time that Jesus was turned over to the death squad until they put him on the cross on Calvary or Golgotha or the place of the skull today. And we're going to stay with him to that point, but then we'll have to leave and leave him on the cross this week until we get back to it next time and take him down and get him buried so he can be resurrected and we can get through the Gospel according to Luke and get studying something else. But at any rate, that's what we're going to be doing today. We're going to be looking at the cross. And I'm so tickled and thrilled, and I love the fact that we're going to get to look at the cross and study some aspects of it and it not be Palm Sunday. You know, that it's not Easter. You know, we're getting to do it at a time. See, we only get to talk about the cross like once a year or something. You know, and I don't think that's enough because it's so vital to our belief. So I'm just happy that we're going to get to do that. And all of us have heard about the cross and the crucifixion of Jesus. You know, even if you're not a church type person, you've heard of that. And you could probably tell us something about it. But what I want to really emphasize on this are some aspects of it that we don't talk about much, that maybe we don't even know about. So that's kind of my goal and what I want to be doing today as we're looking at this aspect of the cross. Crucifixion. Man has never invented anything as depraved as crucifixion. Crucifixion is the cruelest, inhumane thing ever invented by mankind. And it really shows us the potential that each of us have and how low we can go in life, how depraved we could become. You, me, our children, people we know, how low we could potentially go. It's amazing. Now, though we would never crucify someone physically, each of us are very good at and would immediately crucify someone with our words. We're good at it. We're experts. We get better as we get older. We'll nail them immediately with our words. And we're experts, and we've become good at that. So I want us to keep that in the background of our thoughts today, of what we're talking about and what we're doing. As I've told you in the past, crucifixion has basically three aspects or three elements to it. And the first element is humiliation. And the second element is the painfulness of it, the excruciation of it. And then the third element of it is, of course, death. And I asked you earlier, which do you think the writers really amplified in those three dimensions? Anybody want to shout out what you think? Is it death, or is it the excruciation, or is it the humiliation of it? I want you to see today that we probably think of the death, but there's only like one verse given to the death. And he said, "It is finished," and he gave up the ghost. There's only four words that are really given to the actual excruciation of it in the crucifixion. There they buried him. Four words. Everything else is built around and built upon the theme of the humiliation. And so what I want us to do today is sort of look at it from this way, because you see, a good, successful crucifixion was when the victim was mocked to the max. When the victim actually became a laughingstock, that made a good crucifixion. When the people observing it, were drawn into it and laughed at this hideous execution. And that's foreign for us. In our minds, we can hardly imagine watching and laughing at an execution like that, a crucifixion. But that's what made a good one. And these Roman soldiers, this death squad, were experts. Trained experts, trained to humiliate. They did everybody. But the way they staged the crucifixion of Jesus and the way they leveraged the laughter with Jesus, it was by using the theme that actually came from Pilate on a written notice that he had to be nailed over the head of Jesus. And it said, "This is the King of the Jews." And everything else about the crucifixion is staged around that theme and that thought. I mean, think about it just a second. The soldiers mocked and laughed at him. Of course, the Jewish leaders mocked and laughed at him. The crowd mocked and laughed at him. The passersby waggled their head and laughed at him. Even the thieves, the criminals on the cross, mocked and laughed at him. Everybody was drawn into this humiliation thing. So I want us to kind of see this today and why this actually took place and the part that it really played in the cross. Now, Luke doesn't give us a lot of information concerning the time that Pilate turned him over to the death squad to be crucified, until he hit the street. Luke picks it back up kind of when he hits the street carrying the cross, dragging the cross. But Matthew does, and Mark does, and John tells us what happened in the meantime. And so I want to pull a couple of scriptures. I want to pull a couple of thoughts here from the Gospel according to Mark first before we get into what Luke said and see what is said here in Mark's Gospel concerning what we're talking about. In Mark chapter 15 and verse 16, it says, "The soldiers led Jesus away into the palace." Now, that is the Praetorium. "And called together the whole company of soldiers." Now, that's 50 or 60 men. Why do they need 50 or 60 men? A death squad consisted of 4 men. What are they doing here? They're saying, "Come and watch the show. Come, we're going to put you on a comedy act. Come and watch this. Be a part of our comedy act. Watch what happens." And they put a purple robe on him. Now, first they had stripped him down. Matthew says that, and you'll see it as I finish reading here. They put a purple robe on him and then twisted together a crown of thorns. You've heard about that. But that's what the thorns was about this humiliation aspect. And set it on him. And they began to call on him. "Hail, King of the Jews!" There's the theme. "Again and again, they struck him on the head with a staff and spit on him." That's total humiliation. "And falling on their knees, they paid homage to him." Now, what were these 50 or 60 soldiers doing? They were being drawn in. They were laughing. They were mocking. "And when they had mocked him, they took off the purple robe and put his clothes on him. And then they led him out to be crucified." They carried this diabolical satire on right into the streets of Jerusalem. You see, a successful crucifixion was when the executioners could turn this hideous execution into a bloodthirsty act that would draw in a burlesque, that would draw in all the audience, draw them into this sickening humor. And these soldiers, these Roman soldiers, this death squad, did an excellent job. I would think, knowing what I know about the Scriptures, that God had the very best death squad that could take this mocking to the max. This is what made it good. This is what made a successful execution. Now, I want to read to you now the next verse that's in Luke. And we're basically going to skip it, but I just need to read it just to tell you why we're skipping it. As they led him away, they see Simon from Cyrene, who was on his way in from the country, and put the cross on him and made him carry it behind him, behind Jesus. Now, we did this at Palm Sunday. It was the sermon we did called This Man. We did this one, and I have you the HTTP address here. So if you want to watch it, if you want to hear it, or if you want to read it, it's available to you there. But I'm not going to go through that again. But now Judy says this next verse that I've talked about. I just can't find where I talked about it. So if I have, forgive me. But there's a specific couple of aspects here that I really want to draw out from this next specific part that we read in Luke. Luke 23. Verse 27 says this, a large number of people followed him, including. So this is an inclusion to the other people that are there. These people are doing something different from the crowd, the other crowd that's there that's following him, including women who mourned and wailed for him. Now, everybody wasn't mourning and wailing. Everybody else was in this laughter mockery thing. But these women were mourning and wailing for him. And Jesus turned and said to them, daughters of Jerusalem, that's extremely important, but do not weep for me, weep for yourselves and for your children. Now that's very, very important. For the time will come when you will say, blessed are the barren women, the wombs that never bore and the breasts that never nursed. Then they will say, now hold on to this because I'm coming back to it. Then they will say to the mountains, fall on us, and to the hills, cover us. For if men do these things when the tree is green, what will happen when it is dry? What is Jesus speaking of here? What's he referencing? What's he referring to? Now, what's so interesting here is that from the time that Pilate turned Jesus over to the death squad until the time they put him on the cross, these are the only words recorded by Jesus, recorded Jesus saying. The only words that are recorded. After he's on the cross, he has the seven statements. But this is it. This is vitally important and important that we get it. Now, these women, they were not the followers of Jesus. They were not the ones who followed him around in Galilee and aided him and supported him in his ministry. These women were daughters of Jerusalem. They lived in Jerusalem. That was their residence. That's who they were. They were professional mourners. That's how they made their living. They were professional mourners. And so these are who these women were. Now, just it's so interesting to me that in all of Scriptures, you never find a woman speaking hostile things about Jesus. You never find a woman who's saying negative things about Jesus. Now, men did all the time, but not the women. Why is that? Why do you think that is? It's because Jesus respected women. He never talked down to them. He never saw them as lesser, though the whole society, the rest of the society did. Jesus didn't. If he did anything, he exalted women. And it's because of the teachings of Jesus Christ today in Christian-based societies that women are seen as equals and not lesser. Women, you need to thank Jesus for that. Because you lived in some of these other countries, you couldn't be you. But Jesus made women equal. And you need to thank him for that because you are equal. You're not lesser. I don't care what your husband says. I don't care what your boss says. I don't care what anybody says. You are you, and you are special to God. Now, what's so interesting here in this passage is Jesus didn't turn to these women and say to these women, and say, I really appreciate your sympathy. I need some sympathy right now. I'm not getting any loving, and I really, really do appreciate your sympathy. That's not what he said. What did he say to these women? Don't weep for me. I'm not the victim. You're the victim. Weep for yourselves. Weep for your children. What's he saying? He's saying, weep for this generation. Now, I don't need to explain to this church what that means. Jesus is referring to a time that's going to come upon that generation where the Roman armies are coming in and going to annihilate the whole place. Going to tear down Jerusalem. Going to tear down the temple. Going to butcher and slaughter infants, babies, women, men, everybody.
Everybody is going to be slaughtered. I am trying to stay on track here. Everybody is going to be butchered. Women will be raped. Men will be slaughtered, and those that aren't slaughtered will be crucified until they run out of lumber to crucify on. This is going to be horrific. And these women and their children were going to experience that. Jesus says, don't weep for me. I'm not the victim. You're the victim. And this actually happened to them. And these women actually experienced what Jesus said they would experience. Now, I'm not going to go into all of that. That's not my point here. Here's something I really want to do, though, for you, is I want to help you link up the scriptures here so that those of you who have a quest for truth and want the Bible to make sense to you, I want to hook this up. Because in verse 30, he says there, then they will say to the mountains, fall on us, and to the hills, cover us. Now, where else is that said? What? Matthew, where else? Book of Revelation. All right, let me read it to you from the book of Revelation, what it says there. Revelation 6:16 says this, they called to the mountains and to the rocks, fall on us and hide us from the face of him who sits on the throne. Now, who would that be? That's Father God. And from the wrath of the Lamb, who would that be? Jesus or the Son of Man. Am I right? For the great day of their wrath or the great tribulation has come. And who can stand? Now what Jesus did is he's talking about these mountains here. He's talking about the mountains in Revelation. He's connecting those two books. Delbert, are you talking about the book of Revelation? Really talking about the coming of the Roman armies on Jerusalem in AD 70? Well, I'm not talking about it today because I don't have time. But you do need to know that when Jesus talks about the Great Tribulation and he sandwiches it between it coming upon that generation before he says it and after he says it, and when you think about that and he's connecting those two thoughts right here, you need to understand that the book of Revelation, at least in part, is concerned with what's going to happen to that generation and not what's going to happen and what you hear is going to happen to us 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 years later. You need to understand to have this correct biblical interpretation. You need to have this. You need to get it. Now, Jesus says, I'm not the victim. You're the victim. You're the victim. Your children are the victim. Your generation is the victim here. I'm not the victim. But what I really want you to primarily see here is that this is so important to him. He is on the way to being crucified. These are the only words recorded Jesus said from the time Pilate turned him over to be executed until he got to the cross. These are the only recorded words. This was so important to him that he stopped everything and warned these people one more time. It was so on his mind, he would not let them by without one more warning. That's just fascinating to me. And so I want to not let you by without warning you and let you know, listen, there's teaching that you just don't need to go with. And when I talk about this stuff, people get mad at me. They think I'm taking their tribulation away. I'm taking their rapture away. No, I'm just trying to show you what the scriptures really say. Now, that's what I want you to see here. Now, he talked about this tree thing, this green tree thing. Let me read it to you. He said, for if men do these things when the tree is green, what will happen when the tree is dry? What does that mean? If men are this depraved, if men are this vile, if men are this cruel to do this kind of thing now, this crucifixion thing now, when it's a time of peace, when things are supposed to be good, what will they do when they come to kill? What will they do to you? What will they do to your children when things are bad? That's what he's talking about. Next verse. Now they're on their way to the place of the skull, Golgotha, Calvary. They're on their way there, and they get there, and let's pick it up there. The next verse says in Luke 23:32, two other men, both criminals, were also led out with him to be executed. And when they came to the place called the skull, there they crucified him. Four English words, and that's it. We're not told anything about spiking him to it, to the cross, or even if there was a cross. We're not told how they positioned him. how they lifted the cross. We're not told anything. We're not told anything about the pain or the execution or the suffering or any of the aspects of crucifixion. We're not told anything about the excruciation. There, they crucified him. That's it. Along with the criminals. And one on his right and the other on his left. Now, the emphasis here is really the continuation of the comic play, of the burlesque. The right-hand man and the left-hand man. They put Jesus in the middle on purpose. That was an accident. Here's his right-hand man. He's the king. Here's his left-hand man. He's the king. See, Jesus as a king was laughable. He had no domain. He had no army. He had conquered nothing. Nothing in the natural said he was a king. His followers were at best meager, and only one was there, and that was John. His mama was there, and women stood off at the distance, but his disciples weren't even there. He was laughable as a king. And the Jewish leaders knew it. They knew that Rome, when they crucified somebody, they humiliated them. They mocked them to the mat. They made them a laughing stock. And that's why they demanded Pilate to crucify him. That's why it wasn't good enough to punish him. That's why it wasn't good enough to scourge him. They wanted people laughing at Jesus. They wanted no one to take him seriously. And they got it. Because everybody laughed. It's interesting when you begin to really look at this stuff from this perspective. Right hand, left hand man. They came to the place that's called the skull. Now, nobody really knows exactly where this is. We know the traditional locations that they say that it was, but nobody knows for certain. But the only thing that we do know for certain is the restraint that these writers, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, gave concerning what actually happened on that cross or at the cross or at the crucifixion. There are no details. We're not told about the spikes. We're not even told about the construction of the cross. We're not told about the excruciating pain that they went through. We're not told about any of that. Though there were tens of thousands of people executed under the Roman Empire, we have minimal knowledge of what really took place and how this really, really happened. We only have one archaeological find that tells us something, and I'll talk about that in just a moment. But it's amazing. Josephus, even the historian, he only writes that it was a death most hideous. Nothing is really given to us concerning that. Now, when they got to the place of the skull, when they got there, they offered the victims a drink, and it was gall mingled with wine. Now, gall is a poison, but when you diluted it down and mixed it with wine, then it became a sedative. And so it was offered as a sedative to sedate the person being crucified. I mean, think about it. The knee-jerk reaction would, of course, be to resist, to fight. Am I right? I mean, these guys are about to drive spikes into me. They're going to hang me up here, and I'm going to die here. Anybody would fight and scream and yell. That would just be the reaction. But Matthew tells us that Jesus refused it. You know, I envision him just laying out on the cross, positioning himself, laying down there and laying his hands out there for the spikes to be driven in and positioning his feet for the spikes to be driven in. He didn't want to be sedated. He wanted to experience this for us. Now, concerning the spikes, we're not told of this. We have there one archaeological find. I'll tell you about it, and I give you a reference for it here. But it was a man named Jehohanan. And they found his bone in an ossuary. Ossuary is a big rock box where they put bones in it of the individual. They lay them in the tombs. They would decay. Then they would pick the bones up after the flesh had decayed and put it in this ossuary. Well, in Jehohanan's ossuary, they found a spike. And what's interesting about this is we're basically taught that the spike is driven through. The legs are sort of crossed and the feet kind of cross over and they drive one spike through both feet. That's how we're told. But in Jehohanan's ossuary in his heel was this spike, and it was driven in this way. which shows us that in reality, the way the crucifixion actually happened is the main beam going up, one leg would be put on one side and one on the other, and then the spike would be driven in on the side, on each side of the foot. Each foot got a spike in the heel. And then, of course, the arms would be stretched out and the spike would be driven through the wrist, not the hand, the wrist, because that could hold and support the person. Now, we're not told any of this in the scriptures. The writers, none of them tell us this kind of information. But can you imagine the excruciating pain that would incur? A spike driven through your heel and through your hands. I mean, all of us have suffered nerve damage. I mean, imagine the nerve damage that's happening here. We've all had a pinched nerve somewhere in the back, or maybe you've had a toothache like I have. And then when that nerve goes off, I mean, it like blows the whole side of your head off, right? And it blows your eyeball out. And it's excruciating. Imagine what was happening to these people who were crucified. Imagine what was happening to Jesus as he was crucified. The excruciating pain that he went through. But none of it's talked about. That's not the emphasis of the cross. How interesting. What's happening is everybody there is being drawn in to this demonic humor. It's sad when you really begin to look at it from this perspective. Every person there is caught up in it except his mother and maybe John. Everybody else is diabolical here. They're coming to this comedy. The Roman soldiers are all into it. The teachers, the leaders of Jerusalem, the leaders of the Jews, they're all into it. People that are in the crowd are all into it. The passersby are all into it. They're onto this mocking and laughing and spewing out these insidious things that they're saying and making jokes of people dying on the cross. Even the criminals who are crucified with him are in it. And both of them were in it. And I'll talk about that in just a second. So what I want to do, you see, it's like something has come over them. It's like something's happened for people to be this cruel and this mean. And so what I want to do is I want to read from Luke, but I also want to read some from Matthew and some from Mark, just to pull out some of this. I can't read all that's written about it, but I want to read some of it that's written about it. So in Luke chapter 23, verse 35, it says here, the people stood watching. Now, just stop there. Is that what you do? Would you want to stop and watch people being crucified? This has become entertainment. The people there stood watching, and the rulers even sneered at him. They weren't just watching. They were hurling insults and sneering and making jokes. And they said, he saved others, let him save himself, if he is the Christ of God. And I want you to start noticing the times that the word Christ is used. Christ is the Jewish term for king. And of course, the Gentiles' term for king is king. And then also notice the time of the Son of God is used in these verses that I'm going to be reading you. Because this is the theme. This is the theme of the crucifixion of Jesus. Let him save himself if he is the Christ of God, the chosen one. And the soldiers, here they come. The soldiers also came up and mocked him. They offered him wine vinegar. Now, this isn't the sedative wine. This is a mocking wine. What they were doing is like presenting a king a glass of wine. They were honoring him with the wine. It shows you as I'll read on. The wine vinegar, and said, if you are the king of the Jews, save yourself. And there was written notice above him, which read, this is the King of the Jews. It's right in the center of the whole thing. The whole thing is staged around this particular written notice given by Pilate. And it's our title, and it's their theme. And one of the criminals who hung there hurled insults at him. Aren't you the Christ? Save yourself and us. I'll talk more about that in a moment. In Matthew's gospel, here's some things that he wrote about it. Beginning at verse 39, chapter 27. Those who passed by, just people passing by, coming to see the show. Those who passed by hurled insults at him, shaking their heads. I mean, just imagine it. You know, well, look at you. You're something, aren't you? You know, look at you. They're waggling their heads. In the same way, the chief priests, the teachers of the law, and the elders mocked him. Everybody's into it. He saved others, they said, but he can't save himself. He's the king of Israel. Let him come down now from the cross, and we'll believe him in him. He trusts in God. Let God rescue him now if he wants him. For he said, I am the Son of God. In the same way, the robbers, plural, who were crucified with him also heaped insults. Now, this is amazing to me. Heaped insults on him. Here they were hung up there just like him, dying. And they're caught up into this comic. They're caught up into this sickening comedy act that's going on here. Something's going on. Mark, reading from his gospel, Mark 15:32. Just to point out the same thing. Let this Christ, this King of Israel, come down now from the cross, that we may see and believe. Those, plural, those crucified with him also heaped insults on him. Only Luke talks about the thief on the cross and how he repented and said, I want to come into the kingdom with you. And Jesus says, today you'll be with me in paradise. Only Luke tells of that. Initially, they both hurled insults. We'll talk about it next time. Initially, they both hurled insults, but this one saw something. This one saw this Jesus guy, either to his right or to his left. This guy saw something that he wanted. He recognized Jesus to be who he is. We'll talk about that more next time. I want you to see this word that's translated mocked in the English language. It's the Greek word epihizo. And what it means is to play with. It means to trifle with. See, the execution of Jesus had become this insanely funny comedy. And everybody was in it. I started seeing it, you know, and started seeing how the emphasis was on the humiliation aspect and the dishonoring aspect of the thing. And so I went through each gospel, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, and I counted the verses from the time they got to the place called the skull until Jesus died, and counted the verses. In Matthew's gospel, there's 18 verses given to it. In Mark's gospel, there's 16 verses given to it. In Luke's gospel, there's 14 verses given to it. And in John's gospel, there's 8 verses given to it. And it's dominated. It's dominated by this mocking, by this humiliation, by this joking, sinister comic act, this diabolic comedian thing going on here, this burlesque show that's being projected. It's become a play, a trifle act. It's amazing. This is the emphasis of what the gospel writers write here concerning the cross. Now, it's become a comedy act, an insanely funny comedy act. But this is God the Son. And this is blasphemy at its apex. No one has ever blasphemed God like this. No one has ever sinned like this. You're crucifying the Son of God. No one. If there was ever a time to send a fireball out of heaven and burn them all up, this was it. If there was ever a time for the deluge to really happen, this would have been it. Not back when Genesis, but now the flood should come and destroy them all. If man is this depraved, if man is this sick, God needs to do something. He needs to release the angels of God to go and slew them all. If there's ever a time where God's vengeance could be justified, this is it. When the punishment could come upon man, when the smiting could come upon man, when the crushing could come upon man, it needs to happen, and it needs to happen now. And it did. It did. But not on the Roman soldiers, and not on the Jewish leaders, and not on the crowd, not on the passersby. Came on Jesus. All of humanity and its sins and its depravity is hurled at the Son of God. In the writings of Isaiah that were written 750 years before this event that we're talking about today took place, Isaiah wrote of it. David wrote of it 1,000 years before it happened. But I want to pull some scriptures from Isaiah. You see, what had come on them was the plan of God. What had come on them was the purposes of God. Let me read it. Isaiah 53, verse 4 says this, "Surely he took up our infirmities and carried our sorrows, our humiliations, our dishonor. Yet we considered him stricken by God, smitten by him, and afflicted. But he was pierced for our transgressions. He was crushed for our iniquities. The punishment that brought us peace was upon him, and by his wounds we're healed." Verse 7 says, "He was oppressed and afflicted, yet he did not open his mouth. He was led like a lamb to the slaughter, as a sheep before her shearers is silent, so he did not open his mouth." And then verse 10, "Yet it was the Lord's will to crush him and cause him to suffer." God crushed Jesus with humiliation. He didn't crush him physically. He crushed him with humiliation, with being dishonored. This was the plan of God from the foundation of the world. Revelation chapter 13, verse 8 says that from the foundation the Lamb was slain. Isaiah wrote about it 750 years before it happened. David wrote about it 1,000 years before it happened. This is the plan of God and the purposes of God to crush Jesus. When, I'm finishing up right here with this paragraph. When you or I go through crushing times, and we have, or we're going through them now, or we'll go through them, do we see God doing it, or do we see Satan doing it? When we're going through a crushing time, are we looking for Satan, or are we looking for God? Who's really doing it? See, many of you right now are going through crushing experiences. Is it God, or is it Satan? See, it's so easy for me to look back at my crushing and humiliating and dishonoring times in my life and blame Satan. But once I get through those times and I look back, I see God crushing something out of me. Crushing something out of me so I can fulfill His plan and His purpose and my destiny. So what I want to tell you, what I want to encourage you to do is when you've gone through them in the past, or you're going through them now, or you will all go through them in the future, instead of looking for Satan, let's look for God. Because there's probably something that needs to come out of us so that we can fulfill our destiny and that we can fulfill His purpose for our lives. Is it God, or is it Satan? And you always come to the place in a crushing time, you'll cry out, "Why? Why me? What's? I don't understand." We all do it. But so did Jesus. This is the only time He questioned His Father. Is in this time of crushing. This time of humiliation. It's okay to ask why. But before you think that it's Satan, let's learn to look for God. Let's pray. Father, thank you. Thank you for your amazing word. Father, let us look different at the crushings that we experience. Let us learn that in there somewhere, there's you. You've allowed it. You've brought us to this place. There's something that is good about it. We don't understand it. We don't like it. But it's obviously of you. Because from the very foundation of the world, you have a plan for us. And it's your desire that we fulfill it. So, Father, I pray, help us understand these things.